Welcome to the first episode of EverStage's Go-To Masters Podcast Season 2. We interview the go-to-market leaders from today's most dynamic companies, and their weekly insights, hard-earned lessons, and innovative visions are the stories we bring to you weekly. I'm your host, Mike, VP of Global Sales at EverStage. For today's episode, we have Vindat joining us, who's the Senior Manager of Revenue Strategy and Operations at Immobi. Welcome to the podcast, Vindat. Could you please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Thanks, Mike, and very nice to meet you, and glad to be here. So I'm Vindat. I've been working for almost more than 10 years now, and I was side off into technology. I was like an analyst first, a consultant later, was in the tech domain for roughly 5 years. And then post that, I entered this world of sales strategy, revenue operations, and have been at it for close to 6 years now. I've been with Immobi, and I basically look after all the revenue operations pertaining to the GTM offerings that we have, and learning every day.
Really love it, man. And how is the transition from tech consultant to a kind of a more of a go to market focused role been?
I'd say it's has been like, you know, like everything has been very additive, like everything. Starting from the very beginning that I got a chance to learn, and some way or the other has shaped my journey across the board. Like as an analyst, I learned Excel magic. You know, as a consultant, I was able to get hands-on on building GTM system. Right? How does the GTM tech stack come together, and how does what goes in the back end for the order to cash workflow? You know, how many systems interact? So I got an exposure from on the tech side of things. I got a chance to work directly with the sales team, right, and drive adoption for some of those systems, and also sort of work on how can you make life better for sales, and how can you penetrate the market more using efficiency, process, tools, and analytics. And with Immobi, I got an opportunity to do all of that at scale. Like how do you interact with global stakeholders, global teams, and how do you sort of again build stuff at scale? So I think each stage has been very additive. And has helped me sort of to chart that journey. Still learning a lot. There's still a lot of room for me to learn and all, but it's been an exciting journey so far.
Yeah, I bet, man. I love that. I love that insight. I think a lot of people get really focused on like just one, you know, sector or one segment, one career path, and kind of stick to it. And I think you're really kind of doing yourself a disservice. There's this big world out there. So much to learn, so much to experience, and it all kind of helps itself, right? It's like compound interest. So I think it makes a lot of sense. And also, you know, you kind of bring up something that kind of is a big interest to a lot of our listeners. So what's your approach to targeting customer acquisition in the SMB segment, but also then facilitating that into the enterprise segment? And then a two-part question, how does that approach differ across different markets? So like North America, EMEA, APAC, et cetera.
So I believe that if, like, you know, for both of these segments, I always feel that they have to be tackled holistically. And it's just just not one thing that you fix. You just don't fix your demand gen channel. You don't fix your sales motion. You don't fix your tech stack. You don't fix your teams. You fix all of them. Like, everything needs to go to the right from day one when you're thinking about your ICP. You know, how do you optimize your demand gen channel for an ICP, and how does pricing differ for an ICP, and how do you set up sales motions, and then your sales comp and analytics. So both of these segments need to be thought out differently across these segments in order for you to tap the market better, right? Because what comes as a result of these segments is also, you know, what kind of buying personas are you interacting with? How does the sales cycle look like? How does the buying cycle look like? So in general, like for me, historically, what I've done is for anything SMB, you know, I've always spoken on how can we ensure that the sales sellers have a lot of leads to work on. Like we attack scale. Like you rapidly close deals, acquire new customers at scale. The focus, my primary focus is acquisition. My secondary focus is growth, right? And how does an incentive structure is set up to align with that? How is the lead gen structure? That's basically SMB. How do you target at scale with a little bit of customization, and also marry that with the customer success angle? Because when you're acquiring these many customers at scale, you also need to have your systems and processes in place to service these customers at scale.
Right.
and how do you standardize stuff on that side? How you build the right playbooks, how you build the right response engines to cater to the segment. And on the enterprise side is a totally different ballgame. By the way, it's rather than scale, it's all about depth. Like you have to, again, nail, you have to be much better in defining your ICP as compared to SMB. You need to be able to map decision makers across the clients, and you need to motivate and set up a plan for your comp plan for your sales team, which force them to go into the depth of each account. Right? And also, how do you sort of tackle these big accounts across geographies? For example, one of the things that we try and do is something running as a global accounts program, right? Because some of these accounts are spread into multiple geographies. So how do you set up a structure and a plan which facilitates multiple sales teams of different geos working together to crack these accounts in depth? So essentially, these are some of the things and nuances that I try to sort of bake into whenever we're attacking the SMB or the enterprise sector.
Yeah, I mean, you shared so much there. I think, the first thing that comes to my head is, like, number one, with that SMB, little customization in order to service, right? I think everybody's going to need their own kind of nuances and things of that nature, but you kind of have to know where to draw the line, right? Because it's really about scale. And is it really needed at the end of the day in order to service that customer? I think kind of picking and choosing your battles there is really important. And then also just treating the enterprise segment very differently in how you target, right? Like you have to be razor sharp in who your ICP is and really kind of go all in on that ICP. So I love it. As well as the account books, you know, thinking about, all of the different, segments that all over the world of certain enterprise organizations. And that actually kind of leads me to the second part, which is like, you know, how does the approach differ across different markets, right? Like North America, EMEA, APAC, things like that.
So I think some of the historical experience that I've had, what changes is the buying persona, right? Depending on the business. And like, for example, in India, if say I'm working in a certain segment, I might have an intermediary which has a certain influence versus North America, or I might talk to internet. I mean, the buying persona changes across geographies. The buying cycle also has a difference across geographies, right? Because certain organizations have certain steps, legal requirements, and if we're talking about GDPR or something or other international standards that need to be put in place for things to move, which obviously has an impact on the buying cycle. So that comes from geos. There are also cultural nuances, right, that needs to be taken into account while sort of setting up a sales motion. Like, how does North America versus EMEA seller versus impact, how do they need to be incentivized? What kind of bonuses and incentives do you need to come up to motivate sort of a sales teams and that? And then and territories, right? Because the territory concentration in each of the geos differ. Like, in India, you have, for example, financial hub in some other state, and you have a commercial hub in some other state. And similar in case for North America, EMEA has its own different diversification across regions. So how do you identify these business hub across nuances, and how do you reflect that into the book of business that you're building, which also has an impact on the kind of talent that you're hiring? So again, it's all about just breaking different diversification that you have across these geos, and how can you break that in while maintaining and setting up a sales team or designing the book of business or anything else.
Yeah, I think it makes so much sense. Everstage is a global organization as well. And the thing that sticks out to me about what you said, obviously everything there was super relevant, but just being able to build the team that can connect on a real human level, a real personal level, with the people that they're selling to in these different markets and the people that we're partnering with in these different markets. So, and that spreads across the entire organization, from how do we market to them? How do we obviously run a sales process with them? How do we support them when they become customers? You really have to think about those little nuanced things that a lot of times you just look at, spreadsheets and the research that you've done, and you don't take into account those sorts of things. And they're just so important, right? I really appreciate that context. And a lot of times they coexist with each other, right? Especially in that enterprise segment, like you're saying. So there's just a lot there to really kind of set yourself up for success, you know? Kind of shifting gears. So going into kind of your guys's, you know, market. So mobile advertising, you know, you got major players. So you got like Google and LinkedIn, but they're also coexisting with contenders like Unity and Criteo. How does this scenario impact the role of RevOps, right? Like, does it introduce significant changes or does the landscape remain relatively consistent?
So, I mean, it does. And I, in my honest opinion, I think it enhances the role of RevOps, right? Because when you are in a market that is cornered by the giants, something or the other, right? I mean, you need to be, again, as I said, laser focused in your execution. You need to have right processes set up from the very beginning and in a way that they can scale as you scale. Right? You have to be absolutely sure on who your customer is and you know, and how you intend to acquire them, how do you intend to service them. And then in a rapidly growing organization where the scale and the speed of execution is paramount, it's very easy that different functions work in silos. So, and sometimes the processes are not mature. Sometimes the tech stack is not mature. Sometimes, you know, the behavior, the sales behavior is maybe, you know, the sales processes are really varying across. So I think that is where the role of RevOps really gets enhanced in a setup like this, because it sort of gives the opportunity to fix a lot of things, right? And also, it's fun. Because in a setup like this, you get to fix a lot. You know, you can essentially, you know, pick up any vertical, any domain, and you realize that there's a lot that can be optimized for, you know, to sort of build that complete picture. So in a setup like this, I believe the role of RevOps gets really important, and to ensure that, you know, that our processes are standardized, they are documented, they are scalable, that our customer profiles are bang on, they're accurate, that the data is clean, you know, then our analytics framework is churning out the right kind of insights, because there is no scope for error. You know, a customer needs to be tackled now, it needs to be serviced now. There's no scope for error. And you need to do all of that with a lot of speed as well. And I think, so it's great to have a RevOps in a company like this.
Yeah, no, I love it, man. I'm smiling and I'm laughing at this because, you know, our listeners know that, you know, the RevOps community, every, you know, coworker that I've had that works in RevOps are always my favorite people. And I think most sales leadership would say the same thing, because those, they're the type of folks that are so comfortable with wearing multiple hats and seeing problems, solving problems quickly, like you're saying, with no scope for error, you know, there's no time for that. You see a problem, you attack it. And that ranges from so many different things. And they're just those folks, a lot of times the unsung heroes that, you know, we try to shine some light on, you know, with this podcast and this community. So I love it. And you're just a perfect example of that, man.
I love the whole community, community angle that's coming up in the RevOps thing. And again, I'd like to thank you and the team for sort of, you know, putting some gasoline on this community angle, because it's very important for this community to come together, to appreciate each other, to look at the challenges that we all solve, to learn from each other, given the novelty of this domain and the variety of work that each of us does.
Yeah, no, I obviously appreciate it. You know, we take a lot of pride in creating the community and kind of just facilitating the relationships, you know, and kind of stepping back when we need to step back, because, you know, because this market and this segment and the RevOps community itself is really busy, right? You know, and it's a lot of heads down work, you know, and so coming up from air, I think everybody deserves that visibility. And everybody benefits from it as well. And so we're really going all in on it. And I think it's the right thing to do for everybody involved, you know? So I appreciate it for sure. Let's talk about building and kind of obviously coming into a role and there being a lot to do, right? So, you know, when building a RevOps team from scratch, what expectations do you have for new RevOps hire in their initial 30, 60, 90 days on the job?
The plan that, you know, we try to build is, you know, like for the first 30 days, the objective is to just meet and greet with all the stakeholders. There are a variety of them spread across functions. It is very important for any new joiner, I mean, in our team specifically, to meet all the relevant stakeholders and understand firsthand their challenges, like, and what would they need solving or what would help them. I think the first 30 days are focused on that. The next 60 days after that is primarily sort of focus on getting more depth into the business, getting more depth into the processes, getting more depth into the systems, try and connect the whole picture as to, you know, how everything comes together. And then as a result, and with the expectation that after 60 days, you know, the individual should be able to spot areas of improvement or the gaps or whatever fixes needs to be done. I think that is the expectation from the first 60 days that we have. And the 90 is typically, you know, expectation that after 90 days, the individual should have at least one project or one area that he or she would like to focus on and build and would want to solve for. Now, the solve doesn't need to be immediate, however we would want them to be immediate. But the solve doesn't need to be an immediate one, but it should be something that creates, you know, relevant impact. It should be something that moves the needle. It should be something that makes life easier for someone in the organization. And the individual should be able to, you know, spot and prioritize, okay, this is what I want to do and run. So that is the plan that we try and follow across different domains that we hire for. Obviously, there are nuances with each domain company, but generally, this is the structure that we try and follow.
No, I love it, man. I think it's very easy for most organizations and most people to want to rush into making impact, which I certainly can appreciate and understand where that comes from. But I think the reality is how you feel about something 30 days in is like super different than how you feel about it 90 days in. You know, you're not seeing the full scope of what's going on when you first start at a job. And so when you're talking about the 90-day goal is to kind of move the needle for at least one thing, but it doesn't necessarily have to be this like life or death immediate impact sort of strategy or sort of initiative. I think that's perfect. You know, let's make sure that we're pushing the limits on like driving impact and creating the right behaviors to actually generate outcome versus busy work, but also not like put the stress of making monster decisions really early because they're probably not going to be accurate, right? You got to listen and learn before you can, you know, really drive change, you know? So I love that. I think that approach is spot on. And one of the things that kind of triggers is, you know, we were talking about compensation a little bit earlier in our discussion. We were talking about different market segments and driving behaviors of your, you know, go-to-market teams. And obviously compensation really, really is that lever that I think most folks in the go-to-market community, but maybe not outside of the go-to-market community, fully understand really can drive change, right? And really can drive behaviors for what you want. A lot of times it really comes down to that compensation strategy. And so when designing and owning, you know, a comp strategy, you know, what are the key factors you would consider and how do you align this with overarching business goals?
So it's a tricky part. It's tricky because it's one of the most sensitive topics to cover in any org, and tricky because obviously it has impact in some way, but sometimes it's overlooked. But essentially what we try and bake in a lot of factors, right? Like the first thing that we start with is, you know, like our maturity in each of these markets, how penetrated we are in each of these markets, that helps us understand, okay, how much effort needs to be put in across these markets. And then second is like, what does the product mix look like? You know, like is my product portfolio consistent across all the markets? You know, what is my team mix look like? You know, like how tenured are they? How senior are they? And the last part is like, after all of this, I think, and this is the part that is my personal favorite, is having a feedback loop. Like, how do you keep on analyzing your compensation strategy and plans and try and feel and always looking at if it's working or not? Is it really effective? Are the reps really motivated? You know, you might be hitting your numbers or missing your numbers at an overall level, you know, but how does that turn out at a seller level? And continuously keep on making changes in line with your product readiness, with the market dynamics. I think the feedback loop is extremely important in any comp strategy to keep on changing, because I think we are past that age where business is done the same way for years to come. Right? Almost every model, whether you're looking about the SDR model or the field sales model or the inside sales model, every model is evolving at a rapid stage. And I think the comm strategy should also, you know, be in line with that to make sure that how do you incentivize the right behavior. And it should not be like you have this whole strategy for the whole of the year. You might need to change it in a quarter or half yearly, who knows, depending on the model that you have. So that's why I think the feedback loop and continuous review and improvement is, in my opinion, one of the most important parts of the overall comm strategy.
Oh, preach, man, preach. That feedback loop and you know, how I internalize that is just you have to be willing to be fluid in your compensation strategy. Right. I think it's very, very common for folks, especially in organizations, to take when things are going really well and have that be status quo and have that be the benchmark for what the future holds. I think generally that makes a lot of sense. But the reality of it is things change. The market dynamic changes, you can't have everybody not hitting goal. And then, then your culture really gets kind of shut from it. And you can't just hold on too tight to one thing. Everything changes in life. I think it's a microcosm of life, but a lot of times I know, especially for data-driven organizations, once you set that baseline and you have a period of time where it's working and you obviously just want to up-level and up-level and up-level, I think it makes sense. But is that the actual reality of what's going on? And then are you now just being delusional, right? I think really looking at what is working and what's not consistently and continually, evolving is so important. And I think a lot of organizations really feel negative impacts when they're not like that. Right. And that also is, it's a microcosm for a lot of things. Right. Product design, go to market in general, everything that you're doing. Think about the BDR process, 5 years ago versus how it is now, it's completely different. And so, you can't just, stick to your old ways. I think that's how you become a dinosaur. And so that really sticks out. And then ultimately kind of like talking about compensation plan design. Obviously there's a lot of challenges with it, right? From ideation to strategy to development to planning to implementation, roll out across different teams and different geos, right? Where do organizations commonly encounter obstacles in this, pretty comprehensive journey?
I think the fundamental principle that we try to employ, how do you draw the line between, standardization and flexibility, right? There is obviously one school of thought where, and it depends how you approach this, right? From an administration standpoint, you would want to achieve a different level of standardization, thereby to impact your processing time and to payout time. But the markets are different. Your readiness is different in all markets. So there's also an angle of flexibility that needs to be accounted for. So how do you draw the line between standardization and flexibility? And, have an underlying principle, and then we should start to look at how do you reflect the nuances of your comp? You can come up with the structure that, my comp plan will have X many components, it'll have a certain accelerator, it'll have a certain threshold, it'll have a certain ABC things. But and then how do you do it that structured, looking into the externalities, looking into your place in the market, your product, your pricing, the number of sales, X many things, right? So I think the fundamental first step should be to understand and to draw the line between being standard and being flexible. It's very important to name down the framework that you intend to apply. And then we should try and bake in the nuances of each market that you're operating in. And then the stage of execution comes where it's also a key part that, how do you enforce the right kind of transparency into your compensation process? How do you, again, enable the right kind of insights? I think these are some pillars that the compensation strategy, at least, we try and follow for our comp strategy.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense, and it's super insightful. And I think a lot of the folks that are listening, that are involved in compensation, are going to get a lot of benefits from, right? So I really appreciate it. So just a couple more questions as we close up here. So are there any specific resources or books that you would recommend for someone to scale their career in RevOps?
So I honestly, there are I'm a fan of RevOps communities, and there are a bunch of great folks spread across these communities. So, most of the resources that are posted on these communities, I don't have a favorite, because I find all of them very good and exciting. But I think to start with, just having a community, looking at the challenges, looking at the resources being posted, any of them could be a good start. I'm not much of a reader, so I don't have any books to recommend. And obviously, RevOps is a very new field, so everybody in Mangalore is learning. But I think the advice would be to just go into any community and just keep on reading whatever is posted to get yourself started, and then try and figure out a domain that anybody would want to focus on.
Yeah, I love it, man. I think I'm very similar, right? Where it's important to learn. But I have two young kids, right? So sitting down and taking time to read is just hard, right? It's just really difficult. And so what I find is find those communities, right? Like this one, or there's a variety of them that are out there, and just be consistent with it, right? Find a podcast and listen to it, have some structure around that consistency at a certain time of the week. Right. Every time, every day that comes up that you do it, because there's so much information out there that boiling the ocean can seem very daunting. Right. Where do I even start? That's been really helpful for me and I think in today's day and age, regardless if your organization has the best ongoing training, ongoing enablement strategy out there, in order for you to really set yourself apart, you have to be learning outside the job. I think it's just the reality of it, right? That's life. It just is what it is. You got to keep pushing forward. And so just being consistent, find something, be consistent with it, and I'm sure you'll benefit from it. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a book. It could just be that community. Any final, words of wisdom for our listeners who aspire to excel in the field of ops?
I believe, it's like choose your hero ingredient. There needs to be one thing, choose one thing that you need to absolutely nail. One thing that I always see, because there's so many things that any DevOps professional tries to do, right? And you can be an expert in almost everything. That's one way. But there's one bang-on skill that one should have. It could be analytics. It could be operational efficiency. It could be process improvement. It could be sales comm. It could be sales tech. The diversity and the span of this domain enables a lot of flexibility. It gives us a lot of options. It gives a lot of areas to champion. But I think one should definitely pick one area that they should champion, and they should be the absolute go-to, and one should not feel that I'll be limited in that, because almost everything comes together. But champion that one area. And be an absolute expert in that. And the second point is always be visible. I think visibility in any organization is of prime importance for any DevOps professional. One should know the art of communication. One should know the I should not say one should boast themselves, but maybe yes, that if you have accomplished something, if you've achieved something, just spread the word across the org what you've solved for. And always try and communicate as to what you're building and solving for. I think because this team, as you said, works across a lot of domains. Sometimes the work is not noticed, and it should be. So I think mastering one champion skill and always be always sort of try and be visible, maintain a communication channel, keep on getting those announcements up, what you're solving for. I think those are two things I'm sort of seeing this way.
Oh man, I think I hope that message drives action to a lot of our community, right? And what I mean by that is specifically around most people in the RevOps community are driving significant impact for their organizations, But like I was saying at the beginning, a lot of times these are the quote unquote unsung heroes, right? You drive this, you know, tremendous impact. You make significant beneficial changes for your organization and for the team that you're supporting, but you go unnoticed, right? And it just kind of happens. And then people start seeing success, and then it falls onto maybe the customer teams or the more customer facing teams for sure. And so how can you make sure that you're getting your flowers, right? How can you make sure that you're making yourself known for what you're accomplishing without, being arrogant about it, right? And what comes to mind is make sure that you have a really great, transparent communication with your leader, right? Because they're really going to be the ones that can actually exfoliate that for you, and really kind of get that word out. And then it's also a lot less uncomfortable, when that's the case as well. But sometimes you need to push for it, right? And especially in today's day and age when it's not like we're in the office all the time. A lot of times your work is literally you in front of your computer by yourself, it's okay to ask for to be recognized when you do something well. And I think you're doing yourself a disservice if you're not. I with my teams, I always call it, being selfish with your success to a certain, to a certain point, right? You have to be, right? That's what life's all about. If you're doing great work, let's make sure you feel good about that great work, right? And you got to really make sure that your leadership team is all in on that. So kind of last part, where can your audience connect with you and learn more about your work in RevOps?
So I'm on LinkedIn. I think anybody who's needs any help, anything, I'm always on LinkedIn. Feel free to hit me up or anything.
I love it, man. Well, that brings us to the end of this insightful episode of Go to Masters. Big thanks to Vendant for sharing his experience and super valuable insights. Remember, you guys can tune in every week to learn more about the game changers driving hypergrowth companies across the globe. Go to Masters is brought to you by Everstage, your trusted partner for transforming the way businesses handle sales comp. I'm your host, Mike, signing off. Thank you.